Now, if we're living in the golden age of television, then 2017 is definitely a year worth taking a closer look at. There were TV show comebacks, book and movie adaptations, and new seasons of shows that a lot of us were already addicted to. Angelica Bastian is a critic and staff writer at Vulture. She's here to talk about some of the most popular and iconic shows of the year and maybe some that went under the radar. Angelica, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, before we get into particular shows, were there any themes you were watching as this year emerged?
Oh, definitely. One theme I definitely noticed with shows like The Handmaid's Tale, for example, was just watching pop culture really reckon with feminism in a very unsubtle sometimes way, using the language of the feminist movement, sometimes directly dealing with ideas of bodily autonomy in a way I found both fascinating and frustrating. I think that was very important to the television we were seeing this year, along with how we're kind of reckoning with nostalgia, both in newer shows like Stranger Things and the revamps or returns of older shows like Will and Grace, for example.
And big picture again, but maybe on a lighter note, I got to say, as I look at people's top 10 lists, I'm kind of overwhelmed. There's so much out there. It all sounds good, and I'm kind of paralyzed by indecision. For someone in my shoes, Angelica, what kind of shows would you point me toward? Not knowing my personal preferences, but what are ones that I shouldn't be missing?
I definitely don't think people should be missing The Good Place. I think that show's amazing. Definitely Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which I believe really evolved this season and is handling mental illness with such honesty that I don't think I've really ever seen in modern pop culture. Those are two shows I very much love. Also, Queen Sugar is an amazing show that I think sometimes falls under the radar a little bit, unfortunately. And Samurai Jack, which returned after a 12-year absence for its final season, and I think was the most stunning meditation on loneliness that I watched this year.
I want to check out one of those shows you just mentioned, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Here's Alyssa.
So he was your first love?
Oh, baby, he was my first everything.
I've thought about him for so long. Those memories are crystal clear. I was so young, he was so big and strong. I can't believe that he...
Oh, so a musical element to that one, I guess. So I got to say, from the title, I thought, oh, this could be really bad, like a funny sitcom with a weird take on mental health. You wrote recently, this is in some ways uniquely a good and realistic portrayal of dealing with mental illness.
Oh, definitely. As someone who has been in and out of mental hospitals, and I'm diagnosed bipolar, and got a fun new additional diagnosis of borderline personality disorder, which was an interesting way to end my year. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is completely honest and breathtaking in how it deals with mental illness, and specifically the way women deal with mental illness, and yet somehow is able to skewer this stereotype of the crazy ex-girlfriend and make fun of it, but still remain sincere and very tenderhearted in some ways about the main character's journey. It's a beautiful show. It's probably one of the most daring on television. Also, hilarious, and the songs are amazing, which, you know, we just heard a clip from the mid-season finale and had the character Paula played beautifully by Donna Lynn Chaplin, and her doing a song about her own sort of old obsession that comes to rear its head, so to speak.
And I've got to imagine there are a lot of shows that have gotten mental illness really, really wrong over the years.
Yes, unfortunately.
And did you have misgivings coming into the show? I mean, with the word crazy in the title?
Yeah, I definitely had misgivings, and I was originally a bit colder on the show in the first two seasons, but in watching the third season and sort of dealing with the mental health low point myself this fall, because I was hospitalized right before Thanksgiving and came out, I realized my issues with the show in the first two seasons wasn't because it was mishandling mental illness, it was just cutting too close to the bone. It's surprisingly on point, despite all its very fantastical trappings of also being a musical and dark comedy and referencing everything from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes to like 1980s hair metal bands. It's a stunning show.
Now, you raise another issue that people have been talking about lately. You know, sometimes there's shows where people say, oh, the first season, it's okay, but it gets really good a couple seasons in. But then you're like, there's so much stuff out there. Do I have the patience to hold off till it really hits its stride?
Don't listen to those people, because those people must not have jobs and lives. Personally, as someone who writes about TV for a living, even I don't have time to deal with that sort of wait and see game. I say, you know, give a show a few episodes. If you're not really captured by it, then just kind of put it on the back burner. You can come back to it if, you know, you hear about a particularly great episode. Read some recaps to catch up, and then, you know, maybe give it another try. But I wouldn't burden people with, you know, you have to watch this show. There's very few shows on television I would say that about.
TV writer Angelica Bastian is with us. We're talking about the best TV of 2017. You can share your favorites, the shows you're recommending, the shows maybe you're getting ready to binge watch over the holidays. The number is 888. I should know this number by heart. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Wanted to give you the pledge drive number there. Want to get into another show that you mentioned. This one gets a lot of attention. Here's a listen to the Handmaid's Tale trailer.
I was asleep before. That's how we let it happen. When they slaughtered Congress, we didn't wake up. When they blamed terrorists and suspended the Constitution, we didn't wake up then either.
This show got a lot of attention, Angelica. As I understand it, it's not one of your favorites out there, though.
That's putting it mildly.
So a lot of people like this. What do you not like about Handmaid's Tale?
Where do I begin? So on a completely aesthetic level, the first three episodes, I feel, are very strong. They set up the world in a very fascinating way. They're beautifully shot, beautifully directed by Reed Morano. Unfortunately, the way the show actually deals with feminism, I feel, is both extremely unsubtle, on the nose, and rather offensive, especially with how it deals with the intersections of race and feminism, which is to say it does not really deal with that. You know, in the book written by Margaret Atwood, all people of color are not in this Gilead, this republic that is controlled by crazy white dudes, you know, who want a lot of power and to control women, which is not that far from reality, to be honest. So the show decides to do things a little differently and cast people of color in both minor and important roles, including the best friend character of Elizabeth Moss's main character. Which, you know, yes, we all want more diversity within television, but you can't just include characters of color in a show like this and not really handle how including, say, black characters would affect the narrative. It doesn't really consider that, and it treats race as if that's something that could be easily forgotten. And considering how evangelical movements handle people of color, I mean, it's just a really dishonest handling.
And
especially,
okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well,
I was just going to rant.
That's okay.
Really,
we can move on from Handmaid's Tale, because you've written about 2016 as being a special year for black TV with shows like Queen Sugar, you mentioned, and Insecure. What do you make of 2017 on that theme?
Oh, I'm going to say some somewhat controversial things. I think in some ways we're seeing a lot of growth for black characters on television. We're seeing a lot more, you know, black women and men behind the scenes directing, writing TV. But in a lot of ways, I feel black television isn't evolving in a way that I'm interested in.
How so?
The handling of mental illness, of queerness, of sort of untangling the ideas of this need for perfection that I think every black kid has probably grown up hearing, you have to be better than everybody else in order to even get half as much success. And I feel like the shows are sort of grappling with that in a very strange way in terms of wanting a sense of perfection within these characters that, I don't know, it's not always fun to watch. I like messy characters, but I like an honesty in that messiness. I want more also just diversity in how we're portraying blackness. I feel like there's maybe more so middle class or upper class black characters. I'm interested in seeing characters who are working poor, but their lives aren't defined by crime. I'm interested in seeing more Afro-Latinos on screen. I'm interested in seeing us in genres beyond, you know, fun, very honest, sort of brazen comedies and very intense, sad dramas. There's more to blackness than that. We're not a monolith.
Angelica Bastian is a critic and staff writer at Vulture. She's talking to us about the year in television. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tell us what 2017 TV show you binge-watched, you're recommending, following closely. Tell us why you love that particular show. And is there one you think has been a little overrated or overhyped? Call in at 800-642-1234 or, again, post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now with Angelica Bastian about the year in TV. She's a critic and staff writer at The Vulture. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What was your favorite new or continuing TV show of the year? What are you recommending? What are you getting ready to binge watch coming up over the holidays? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We heard Angelica from Tim on Facebook. Tim says, I wanted to binge watch Twin Peaks, but they doled it out over months. And yeah, you mentioned, we mentioned earlier, some recaps, some reboots of TV shows. We've got new Twin Peaks this year. What did you think of that?
Oh, wow. I'm now going to have to say this because I've been quiet about it. I'm not a Twin Peaks fan.
The original or the new ones or either?
Both.
Okay.
I mean, I get that it's groundbreaking and important and audacious, but I've just never connected with it. And you know what? It's good to not binge watch everything. Savor the moment. You don't need to watch everything at once.
Yeah. Do you think it's hurting TV, this impulse to want to binge watch everything?
I wouldn't say it's hurting TV, but it's definitely changed our relationship with TV and how we even critique it.
I want to go to our callers now. We'll start with Tony on the line in Egg Harbor. Tony, hi.
Hi, Rob. Hi, Angelica.
Hello.
Well, I guess on that note, I have been binge watching the show Last Man on Earth. And it's a Hulu distribution. Angelica, do you have any opinions on it?
Nope.
You haven't seen that one? That's the thing. There's so much.
No, I've seen a few episodes.
Seen a few? Okay.
It's one of those shows I gave a shot, didn't connect with, and I was like, I have a lot of other stuff to watch.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But you're a fan, Tony, it sounds like?
I think it's the funniest, most poignant, campy, original thing ever written.
Oh, wow.
But in a nutshell, there's a virus that wipes out the entire planet, and there's a handful of people that are saved. Mary Steenburgen is one of them, but the rest are really, you know, they're not notable cast members. Will Ferrell played a cameo role, and it really hits every button on human nature and behavior and greed and jealousy and anger, and I'm just telling you. And I think the writer came from Saturday Night Live. So.
Tony, thank you so much for sharing that. And actually, that reminds me of another point I wanted to bring up, Angelica. He's talking about, this is a comedy, but it's hitting on all the points of human nature. You mentioned The Good Place earlier, which I have watched, and it's hilarious, and it's a philosophy lesson. The Last Samurai you wrote was this meditation on, I think, loneliness. We're getting entertained. We're also getting a lot apart from that entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes shows like Samurai Jack and The Good Place can really surprise you with how they deal with some very heady, intense themes and ideas about human nature, which you wouldn't expect in shows that seem so bright and fun on the surface, at least.
Thanks a lot for the call. We'll go next to Paulina in Sun Prairie. Paulina, hi.
Hi. Hello. Hi. I listen to the show all the time, and it's very amusing what you guys talk about.
Thanks.
I think it's very important for people to hear. But I stopped watching TV a little bit because, I mean, I see some of the black characters and actors and actresses or whatever, they have to play like gay characters or either they have to be on drugs. Like certain TV shows I watch, like Suburban Housewives and Empire, I stopped watching all of that because all the black characters have to be gay or either on drugs, and I don't like that. It's okay if other people choose to be gay, you know, that's their preference. But I feel that they shouldn't have to continue to push it down our throats because it was never like that. You know, it was never pushed at us like this as it is now than it was, you know, years ago.
Paulina, thanks for the call. So she's seeing people, black actors being slotted into just a couple different types, I guess, Angelica.
Yeah, I mean, personally, what I will say is, as a queer black woman, I'm very happy to see more queer black characters on screen, and I hope to see that continue to happen. For me, I think we should have a diversity of experiences when we watch black characters. I don't think it's shoved down our throat. Personally, I am very happy to see more queer characters on screen.
We're talking about TV in 2017. Angelica Bastian is with us. She's a critic and staff writer at The Vulture. Let's give a listen to a clip from the second season of Stranger Things, another show that a lot of people are talking about that I haven't seen. Here's the character Will telling Mike about a scary supernatural sight.
And there was this noise coming from everywhere. And then I saw something.
Demogorgon?
No. It was like this huge shadow.
And people point toward the nostalgia in Stranger Things. Is that part of the theme you were talking about earlier, Angelica?
Oh, definitely. Stranger Things is obviously very interested in the 80s in terms of the pop culture that was released. And again, in terms of the pop culture that was released. That's pretty much it with that show. I am not a fan at all.
Yeah,
yet I've seen the whole second season.
Because you have to, or was there something that kept you going in it?
I don't even know. Who knows? I was just sitting down with my cats, and I was like, why not? And then I looked up, and I'm like, oh, wow. Oh, it's done? Okay.
So the cats liked it anyway.
The cats loved it.
We'll go back to our callers now. Jack is on the line in Eau Claire. Jack, hi.
Hey.
What do you have for us, Jack?
Well, my favorite show over the past year or two is called Detectorists. It is a BBC comedy. It's about two guys that go out metal detecting together. Pretty simple, funny show.
It's a comedy mainly?
Yep, it's pretty, yeah, it's your typical really dry British humor.
Okay, Jack, thanks a lot for sharing that. Again, so much out there. I don't know what all the BBC is doing these days. Angelica, anything else maybe off the beaten path that you're liking that, you know, isn't getting all the buzz these days?
Well, I would definitely say, besides what I've already mentioned, Claws was a really good show. Good Behavior is amazing, and I love a good pulpy, female-led, sort of dark, but still willing to be fun and enjoy the what makes pulp so fascinating and what makes certain versions of crime dramas really fascinating, which is watching beautiful people mess up in fascinating, messy ways. Beyond those two shows and Samurai Jack and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which I already mentioned, I really enjoyed Humans, which is actually, I think, a BBC show. And it deals with basically robots who gain artificial intelligence and are very lifelike. It's like Westworld, but way more interesting and subdued.
And you mentioned Claws, which you had written about, and I saw some other people mention. That one was new to me, so I missed that this year. Tell us a little more about that.
So that's a summer show that takes place in South Florida and is led by Niecy Nash, who plays the owner of a nail salon who is pretty much a front for laundering drug money, and things turn topsy-turvy very quickly. And, you know, on the surface, it's very brightly colored and fun, and Niecy Nash is performance is amazing, but it's also a very sincere show, especially when you start to look at how it deals with the idea of families, both those that we're born into and those that we make.
Let's bring on another caller now. Fawn is with us in Madison. Fawn, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say, I was surprised you didn't mention Blackish among black, you know, written and starred shows. That's still a winner in our household. We also, my husband's a sci-fi buff, and we started watching The Orville, which is, in our opinion, like, takes the best of the spirit of Star Trek and keeps it going, just reinvigorates it. It's very clever. It's very, it has a good heart and humor. And so it's like a good combination of all those things for kind of a continuation of the Star Trek type of legacy. But Fawn, also I just want to say Blackish is a winner for us.
Fawn, thanks. Any thoughts on Blackish and or The Orville, Angelica?
I think Blackish is actually a pretty good show. It's just one I don't necessarily always connect to, and I think it's, again, sort of comes down to class dynamics. It's a great show. It's fun. Tracee Ellis Ross continues to kill it in her performance on that show, but not one that really captures my heart, so to speak. But I will say, I thought it was interesting she brought up the Orville as continuing the tradition of Star Trek, especially now that we actually have a new Star Trek show on TV, Discovery. Well, sort of, I guess. CBS All Access, right, more so than actual TV. Oh, it's so weird nowadays. I don't like either of those shows, and I'm a huge Star Trek fan.
Okay.
Huge.
Well, Angelica, just briefly as we wrap up, anything on your radar for the new year that you're like, you can't wait for?
That's a good question. I'm mostly looking forward to certain shows returning. I am very curious to see how Crazy Ex-Girlfriend continues the third season. It's now on that mid-season hiatus that shows like to do. And so that's one that I'm definitely really curious to see. Also, The Alienist. I'm curious about that one as well.
Well, Angelica, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Angelica Bastian is a critic and staff writer at Vulture. She joined us to talk about the year in TV. Still time to share some of your favorites over at the Ideas Network Facebook page.